Hi everyone. So yeah, this is Regina, and I am here to share with you, I guess, the third, I don't know, what do you call it? The third part. Yeah, that's a good word. The third part of my 6-week mini series, Awakening at Home. And so far I've gone over 3 of 8 skills that can help us awaken. We could say these skills help with that self-discovery that Jacqueline was speaking about. Oh, third installment. That's a good word. Thank you. Yeah, my third installment. So let me talk just a little bit about the skills that I've already shared. And what I'd also like to do is find out if anybody has any questions, because the first 2 times I wasn't here live due to my travel. It was audio. So if you have questions, I would love to take the opportunity to answer your questions. And then if there are no questions or when we are done with the questions, I will move on to the next skill, the fourth skill, which is letting go and relaxing. But the 3 skills that I have taught so far, and in fact, let me just go over all 8 skills. If you were here the first week, you know I asked you to kind of write them down. If we were together, in a physical retreat, I'd have a flip chart with them all written down because visuals can be very helpful. And it can also be helpful to know where you are in that list. So let me just go over all 8 again, and then we'll review the first 3 and then go on to the fourth one. So the 8 skills, number 1 is spiritual aspiration. And as I pointed out before, spiritual aspiration, number 1, that's the only one that we could call kind of in order, because spiritual aspiration always needs to be first. And it's not that you do spiritual aspiration first and then you move on to the other things. Spiritual aspiration always needs to be first. right now, always spiritual aspiration is first. So that's why it's number 1. All of the rest of these are in no particular order, and you would use the skill when it's time for you to use the skill. You would pay attention to your own guiding intuition. So the other things on the list, number 2 is contemplation. Number 3, inquiry and noticing. And this was the type of inquiry that is inquiring into why you are upset. And the type of inquiry that I taught was root cause inquiry. But choose again inquiry also works. Byron Katie's The Work inquiry also works. Number 4 is letting go or relaxing. Number 4 is letting go or relaxing, and that's what I'll move on to tonight. Number 5 is meditation and self-inquiry. So again, just notice that I have inquiry at number 3, and then I have self-inquiry at number 5. So 2 different types of inquiry, each with its own purpose. Number 6 is prayer or devotion. Number 7, surrender and acceptance. Noticing that Nancy's typing these in. So number 6 is prayer or devotion. And then number 7, surrender and acceptance. And then number 8, surrender and listening. So I also have surrender in there twice. And it's funny because one of the things that we were talking about in the last hour is how there is no formula for awakening. And now it appears that I am giving you a formula. But these are, I don't perceive these as a formula so much as skills. They're skills. And the formula for using these skills would be highly individualized as to when you use them, I would say, and how much you use them. Highly individualized, so there's no formula. But these are skills that will help you to awaken. And again, I'm going to go over the first three kind of as a review, but as I go over these, I'm also going to take questions in case you've been at the first two, what do we say, these are called installments, the first two installments of this miniseries. And if you had questions and you weren't able to ask them, I want to give you that opportunity tonight. Next week might also be recorded. So tonight's a good night to interact with me because I'm here. So the first thing again, number one, was spiritual aspiration. And the spiritual aspiration is critical. I don't know how else to say that. One of the things that I've been doing lately is selecting teachings for Awakening Together Radio. And, there's this guy named, I don't know how to say his name, I'll type it in the room, Alon Jiva, maybe, Alon Jiva, that I'm kind of excited about as a teacher, and I've been adding some of his teachings to the playlist that plays on Awakening Together Radio whenever the sanctuary is closed. And the most recent teaching that I added of Alon Jiva's is all about how important it is to increase, this is going to sound so familiar, increase your intense desire for liberation. I mean, that's what his, that's, he has a two-hour teaching on that. How many times do we hear this? How important it is to increase that desire, to have that spiritual aspiration. You know, the words may change, but the idea is always the same. And again, Michael Langford teaches and the most direct means to eternal bliss, that this is number one. Adya Shanti teaches in the way of liberation that this is number one. You know, obviously Regina Don Akers is teaching that this is number one. It's like if you don't have a motivating spiritual aspiration that's pointing you in the right direction, you're directionless. And as I mentioned, the real purpose of a spiritual aspiration is to allow you, to give you something to help you discern right now. Right now. How are you to see? How are you to think? How are you to be in this situation? The spiritual aspiration guides you in that way. And as I mentioned, during the first 5 years of the spiritual path, my spiritual aspiration really was to heal. To heal. And that was so dang helpful. Because, you know, without the aspiration, if you're looking at it through the eyes of the world, the worst thing could be happening in my life. Just the worst thing ever. You know, like, I have almost no money left and some guy moves in with me who starts spending all of my money, and I have no job, and he has no job. I mean, it's just awful. The worst thing ever. Here I am running out of money, and now here's this fool spending all of my money on ridiculous stuff, right? The way that that became helpful to me was looking at it through my spiritual aspiration. All I want is to heal. And as I had that spiritual aspiration in a very genuine way, all of the clarity about how to heal came as a result, and it just changed everything. So the spiritual aspiration is for current moment discernment as you go through your day-to-day life, and it keeps you moving in the direction of awakening or moving in the direction of truth realization, but it's very specific to the stage you are at now, which is why as you mature and as you go through different stages on this formula-less spiritual path, the spiritual aspiration will change. The destination, you could say the goal, the direction isn't changing, but the spiritual aspiration is, because it needs to be guiding you based on where you are right now. So, I guess what I would like to do now is just pause and see if anybody has any questions at all. Oh, wait, I see there's already a question in the room. How do I find my spiritual aspiration? She says, I've never been drawn to contemplation. I'm drawn to the practice of awareness, watching awareness. How do I find my spiritual aspiration with meditation? Well, first of all, I would just drop the last part of the question and simply ask, how do I find my spiritual aspiration? And then, once you do that, I would just ask, you know, just ask what spiritual aspiration is most helpful to me now. Ask in a very genuine way. I haven't gotten to prayer yet, but this would be a very useful prayer. Just ask in a very genuine way, what is my spiritual aspiration? And then expect for the answer to show up. It may not come in meditation. It may come in a song. It may come in what somebody says to you. It may come suddenly while you're in the shower. So you don't want to assume that's going to come in meditation, right? You don't want to assume that meditation is the way. But asking is important. So just ask, and then ask that it be given to you in a way that you'll recognize it, and it will. You know, and you don't need to think about it. You ask, and then you just forget about it and trust and wait for it to show up. So hopefully that answers your question. What other questions do we have about the spiritual aspiration? All right, I'm not seeing any other questions about the spiritual aspiration. Again, we cannot overestimate how important the spiritual aspiration is. We cannot overemphasize. I think that's the word. We cannot overemphasize how important having a spiritual aspiration is. And Jacqueline is saying, you just ask that it be shown to you in a way that you will recognize it. Yes, that's it. And then you just wait. The key is you don't come up with it yourself with your thinking mind. It should be like a gift, you know. Right? That's the key. You don't think it up. That's the key. Let it be given to you. And there's a million ways it could be given to you. You could read it. Whatever books, your inspirational book you're reading, you could read it. You could come across a sentence in the book and you're like, that's it. You know, you'll have an inner recognition. So just let it be given. Yeah, and actually, seek ye first the kingdom can be a spiritual aspiration right there. I don't know if Phil's saying that's his. Maybe that's his. First things first, seek ye first the kingdom, but that can be a spiritual aspiration. In fact, one thing, fun thing that we did at the retreat after asking people to contemplate deeply and discover their spiritual aspiration, we asked people the next morning what they had discovered, and not everyone had discovered it yet, but some had, and some people shared what their spiritual aspiration was. And you know what? I could see the perfection in each of the aspirations, but everybody did not come back with the same answer. Everybody came back with their unique answer, the answer that was right for them. And again, one way that you notice your spiritual aspiration is it's also motivating for you. I don't know if you guys heard me teaching tonight, Seven Steps to Awakening, but did you hear me cheering? I mean, really, joy explodes at the end of that teaching when I'm talking about my spiritual aspiration, forget everything. Absolute joy. You know, just yes, I recognize that's what I am to be doing now, you know, and it was just, that's it. You know, you will recognize your spiritual aspiration. If it's kind of ho-hum for you, it's probably not it. You know, ask, say, whoops, I don't think that's it. Let me wait a little longer, wait till it shows up. All right, so number two. So that was the spiritual aspiration. Number two. The second skill that I taught was contemplation. And contemplation is a time to open up to wisdom. You know, masters, when you listen to a master like Nisargadatta Maharaj or Ramana Maharshi, or, you know, you read the wise parts of the Bible where Jesus is speaking wisdom, you know, that wisdom arises from within. In fact, that wisdom enlightens us. It enlightens even the mind. You know, even though they say the mind can't be enlightened, but I'm using enlightened in a different way here. The mind begins to see differently, begins to understand differently, because of the wisdom that arises from within. And contemplation is a means of opening to that wisdom. And I'm going to say sharing too, sharing here in the sanctuary, sharing in the sanctuary in the way that like Rebecca Gibson does, or the way that Hank Hamilton does, or Kathy Smith, or many others, you know, where they come in with a book, and they haven't pre-planned what they're going to say. They start reading from the book, and then at some point they just stop and they start talking, sharing starts coming through them. That's a type of contemplation. With Carrie, we've named his show or his program, we've named his program Contemplation Out Loud. But that's really what everybody is doing. That's a type of contemplation. You know, so sometimes we contemplate out loud when we share here in the sanctuary. Sometimes we contemplate through a journaling process. Many people have mentioned to me that they need to have a pen in their hand in order for the wisdom to come. Others may just sit silently and even walk away. And then later in the day, this clarity starts coming into the mind when they're not thinking about it, when they're doing the dishes or driving the car or something like that. And all of a sudden it starts showing up later. So there's no specific way that it needs to look. Whenever the ego tells us it has to look a specific way, that's so we can judge we're not any good at it and quit. That's the ego's purpose, to get us to judge that we're not any good at it and quit. It doesn't look a specific way, but contemplation is just a way of opening up to that inner wisdom. And I emphasize there's a big difference between contemplation and reading, although you may appear to read when you're contemplating. But reading, you know, reading in the way that I'm going to use the word now, reading is like, you know, going from one word to the next word, one sentence to the next sentence, one paragraph to the next paragraph, one page to the next page, turning the page. It's a page turner, right? You read, 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 turn the page, read, 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 turn the page. That is not contemplation. Contemplation is much, much slower. Contemplation has a lot more pauses in it. What I've learned is I've learned to contemplate better is that I actually read far less. I may sit down with a book and I may open it up. I might not get more than a paragraph or sometimes even more than a sentence read, because as soon as I read that sentence or that paragraph, yeah, you melt into it. Thank you, Phil. The contemplation begins. So although we use the written word for the act of contemplation kind of as a catalyst, contemplation is not reading. And it's also not thinking. One of the things that I said, I think repeatedly while I was in Costa Rica, and it just came out of my mouth repeatedly, so I trust that, but I heard it come out of my mouth repeatedly while I was in Costa Rica was, here's the way I said it, which you have to not listen to the words in a way, because what I said was, I don't approve of course groups. But that's just the way it came out of my mouth. I personally have, you know, just don't even think about course groups, so I don't approve or disapprove of them. But the way it came out of my mouth multiple times, not just once, apparently it needed to be said multiple times while I was in Costa Rica was, I do not approve of course groups. That's what I said. And I know what's behind that. What's behind that is in course groups, most course groups, contemplation never occurs. What happens in course groups is that they read and then they discuss at an intellectual level. And if someone doesn't understand, if person A doesn't understand, person B explains to them what it means. The best thing in the world is to not know what it means, to sit alone in not knowing what it means, and let wisdom arise. And whenever someone else explains it to you in an intellectual way, like happens in most course groups, contemplation gets bypassed. I always feel that I was blessed when I was a course student because I didn't even know that course groups existed. So I had no choice but to sit there alone with the book and let the wisdom arise. It was the only way for me to do it. But that's contemplation. Contemplation typically happens alone. The exception is if you're doing the kind of contemplation that we do here in the sanctuary, where you're reading and sharing out loud, contemplation out loud. It appears that it's not alone, but it still is, because it's not a discussion, right? It's not the same as the movie discussion that we just had where we were passing the mic around. You know, this is your half hour to read from the book and to share whatever comes to you spontaneously to share. You're still alone, even though there may be other people listening and witnessing to this. So contemplation is something that basically happens alone. And the result, if you will, the result is different for different people. For example, some people will write. You know, like when I contemplate, I write. Oh, yeah. Jacqueline says, unless you're teaching with someone else, yes. I write. Some other people write. And some people, when they contemplate, poetry comes out. Like, oh my God, this gorgeous poetry comes out. You know, for other people, it may not be quite so poetic, but there's written stuff coming out. For other people, when they contemplate, they have images. These images arise in their minds. Maybe even visions, like little mini movies that run in the mind that are part of that are coming from contemplation. Other people just have feelings. Just this deep feeling of peace may come, and they just fail to just sit and be in that deep feeling of peace. You know, I mean, there's not a certain way this needs to look. So I want to pause there and ask, does anybody have any questions that you would like to ask me about contemplation? All right, then, let's move on to number three. Number three was inquiry and noticing. And what I taught last week was root cause inquiry. But as I mentioned, Byron Katie's The Work, that type of inquiry works just as well. Diedrich Wolsack's Choose Again inquiry works just as well. Also, an inquiry process could be born in you. I mean, The Work was born in Byron Katie. Root Cause Inquiry was born in me. And Choose Again was born in Diedrich Wolsack. So a brand new inquiry process could be born in you. So again, there's not a formula. But the idea is, and by the way, if you know, I was listening to Tess Hughes, Jacqueline Eckert's interview of Tess Hughes, from a couple months back. And Tess Hughes talked all about how her inquiry happened in that interview. If you want to listen to that, you can go to the Awakening Together website underneath audios and underneath satsang and look for the Tess Hughes interview and watch that again. She talks all about how inquiry happened for her. So it kind of can happen for different people in different ways, but it seems to always happen. When I interviewed Bentinho, he talked about it. His inquiry was in root cause inquiry, although he didn't give it that title. But when he described how it worked, it was exactly the same as root cause inquiry, but it was born in him. He wasn't copying me, you know. The purpose of inquiry is to look under the covers of the current upset. So If I am mad at, and I would never be mad at Ken for this because he's doing exactly what he's supposed to be doing, inviting you to make a donation to support the miniseries. And in this case, any donation you make goes to the Retreat Center fundraising campaign. So I'm very happy that he put that in here. But let's pretend like I'm not. Let's pretend like, here I am sharing, and then Ken is posting about, the donations right now. And for some reason, that ticks me off. I don't want him posting about the donations while I'm sharing this important message. I'm afraid y'all will get distracted. I'm afraid y'all will start going and donating, something like that. And I'm really angry at Ken for doing this. Not true, by the way, but let's pretend. Root cause inquiry allows me to look under the covers and find out what I'm really angry about. You know, the way Diedrich Woolsack worded it, he did that. He was in Costa Rica with me. The way he worded it is that it's always about me, right? It's always about me. My upset is always about me. I don't use that exact same language, but if you know the root cause inquiry process, you know that that's what I teach. It's always about a belief in my mind. Otherwise, I wouldn't be upset. So what I need to do is I need to ask, why am I mad? I need to find the emotion that I'm feeling. Maybe I'm mad. Maybe I'm angry. Maybe angry is a better word. I always want to find the best word that really describes how I'm feeling. So I'm angry at Ken for that rude post during my teaching, right? I mean, you got to capture what really expresses how you feel. You don't want to sugarcoat it. So I am angry at Ken for that rude post. That's my perception, rude post during my teaching. So then I would ask, why am I angry at Ken? Well, the answer is because it was a distracting post. He made a distracting post. Well, then the next question that comes up is, he's doing it again. No, I'm teasing. He's still distracting. No. So then the next question that comes up is, can I accept that if my mind was perfectly healed, if I was completely enlightened, that Ken's posting would not upset me at all? And again, this is an important step. This is really the same as Diedrich's it's all about me step. I have to genuinely accept that I'm not upset because of Ken's posts. I'm upset because of a belief in my mind. And when I genuinely accept that it is a belief in my mind, it is about me, it's not about Ken, it's not about his posts, then I can continue. And until I genuinely accept it, I can't move forward. But I do. I accept that if my mind was perfectly healed, I would not be upset by Ken's posts. So I move forward and I ask again, then why am I angry? And at this point, all answers need to come from within. If I find myself going back out and saying something about Ken or something about you all, well, but they're distracted, then I'm not following the root cause inquiry process. It has to be looking for that false belief in my mind that is causing me to be angry. So I ask again, now that I've accepted that if my mind was healed, I would not be angry. I ask again, why am I angry? And maybe the next answer comes is, nobody's paying attention to me. That's the next thing that comes up. Nobody's paying attention to me. Now that's actually pointing outward again. And this often happens to people. The next answer points right back out, but it's picked something else. Since I've accepted that it's not about Ken and his posts, now I'm upset because nobody's paying attention. If the next answer that comes up still points out, if the next answer that comes up still points out, then go ahead and ask that question again. Can I accept if my mind was perfectly healed that I'd be okay with nobody paying attention to me? Like, would I be at peace with that? Yeah, I can accept that. Okay, then that's not it either. So why am I angry? Why am I angry? Because I think that what I am saying is not important enough for people to pay attention to. Now that's different. Nobody's paying attention to me is pointing out at you. But I think that what I'm saying is not important enough for anybody to pay attention to. Now I'm getting at my beliefs. I'm getting at my mind. And this is where I want to go with the root cause inquiry. Now, once you're looking at your beliefs in your mind, you do not need to use the step anymore. Can I accept that if I had a healed mind, this wouldn't bother me? You only use that when you're looking at your outward pointing stories. Once you're inward pointing, you don't need that. You just drill down. So I've discovered that I think what I'm saying is not important enough for anybody to want to pay attention to. That's what's really going on here. This is what I think. So now the next good question might be, you could try asking, so why does this bother me that what I have to say might not be important enough? And actually, you know, you might feel like, well, I think this means that, you know, I'm stupid, I'm a loser, I'm dumb, I'm a fake. Usually something like that comes up. That's what I'm really afraid of. I'm a stupid, I'm a loser, I'm dumb, I'm a fake. I'll go with the fake one this time. It all fits together. I'm a stupid, loser, dumb, fake. I'm a stupid, loser, dumb, fake. That's why I'm upset, because I think I'm a stupid, loser, dumb, fake. And when you start asking that, usually what happens when you start getting underneath the covers like that is the feeling may change. A while ago, the feeling was anger. Now, I'm feeling deep unworthiness. Deep unworthiness. That's what this is about. Deep unworthiness. Once you've uncovered this, whatever your false belief is, and here the false belief is that I am deeply unworthy, then you're ready to move to the next step, which I'm going to teach tonight. You've now noticed the false belief, but now we want to move to the next step, which is resting and letting go. Or you could also call, I think I called it letting go and relaxing. So before we move to that next step with this deeply unworthy feeling, I want to see if anybody has questions about root cause inquiry. Okay, so nobody has questions, so I'll go ahead and move forward. So now we're stepping into, you know, kind of new material. I have not yet taught this as a part of this mini-series. People often want to know, what can I do? I think Jacqueline has been laughing at herself today because she asked that question so many times last week to Omotama, what can I do, right? And in a way, there isn't an answer to that question, which is what Omotama told her. There's a part of us that wants to be able to, I want to fix this deep unworthiness. I want to do whatever I have to do to get rid of this deep unworthiness, right? That's in the mind. And there's nothing that you can do. I have seen some processes that give you something to do. And I think that's just so you'll quit asking for something to do. You know, like the choose again process. The choose again process gives you something to do. Once you uncover this deep unworthiness with the choose again process, you look at something, someone else, and you say something like, I forgive myself for believing that I was deeply unworthy. And then you also say, I forgive myself for forgetting that I'm the Holy Son of God. You know, there's something to do. And the mind likes to think that it's these last two steps where I say, I forgive myself twice in two different ways, that it's these last two steps that are fixing it. But that's just not true. I mean, you can practice those last two steps. They don't hurt anything, but that's not what fixes it. What fixes it, and I don't even know if I like that word fixes it, but I'll go ahead and use it. What fixes it is getting the heck out of the way. You see, you've always been the problem. You've always been the problem. The fact that you don't get out of the way, the fact that you are trying to control things and make things the way you want them to be, that's the problem. And so instead of being aware of the fact that you feel deeply unworthy, you chose to get mad at Kim when he posts while you're talking, right? It was a way that you protected yourself from looking. You blame Kim, or you blame everybody else for not caring enough, or you blame something else, pal talk, for not having video. You blame something. You know, we have become masters of denial and repression. It's all of the things that we have been doing that's the problem. The only thing to do here is to stop doing. Stop doing. And that's why this step is called relax, or sometimes I call it rest. Because when you're relaxing or resting, you are completely stopping all doing. And so you just be with that deep feeling of unworthiness that you've uncovered, or that deep fear that you've uncovered, or that strong judgment that you've uncovered, or whatever you uncovered during your root cause inquiry. You don't do anything with it. You let it be. You just relax as much as possible. You take your hands off the wheel. You know that song, Jesus take the wheel? In order for Jesus to take the wheel, you have to take your hands off the wheel, right? You take your hands off the wheel. You don't do anything. You stop doing. I need do nothing. And you just let this be. You let this deep unworthiness be, or you let this intense fear be, or you let that incredible guilt be. In the Tao Te Ching, it says if you want to get rid of something, first you have to let it flourish. You let it flourish. You let it get as big as it wants to get. You let it last as long as it wants to last. And you don't do anything. Now, if you want a helpful formula to help you do nothing, I have a helpful formula. But this formula, which may sound like a doing, is actually teaching you not to do. Listen to it. And you guys know this formula. Rest, accept, and trust. We've called it the rat technique for years here, right? Rest, accept, and trust. That's a formula that teaches you to stop all of the doing. Rest. Rest means rest the mind. Now, the mind is the biggest doer of all. The mind is the biggest doer of all. Usually when we think of doing, we think about with the body. Like today I cleaned house. That's a doing, right? Cleaning house. No. The mind is the biggest doer of all. The mind is always doing, whether the body's moving about or not. The mind, chitter chatter, judge, judge, judge. That's the doing. Chitter chatter, judge, judge, judge. And so if I've uncovered deep unworthiness or extreme fear or unbelievable guilt, man, the mind has a lot to say about that. If it's fear, the mind is probably telling me all the things I need to do to get out of this fearful situation or to avoid this fearful thing that might be coming down the pike. If it's guilt or unworthiness, the mind is probably telling me just how awful I am. Chitter, chatter, chitter, chatter, judge, judge, judge. That's the doing. So I want to rest the mind. I want to rest the doing. And again, in the beginning, I know you guys have heard me say this a million times, but in the beginning, I didn't have the skill. Resting the mind is actually a skill. I told you I'm teaching you skills. Resting the mind is a skill. And if you don't have that skill yet, and you decide you're just going to rest the mind, you'll find it doesn't work. The mind is too wound up, and the chitter chatter, judge, judge, judge just keeps happening. So there's an active way to rest the mind. And the active way to rest the mind is what I call helpful self-talk. Now, helpful self-talk is different than positive self-talk or positive affirmations. For example, you know, with my story, I'm feeling deeply unworthy. Well, let's imagine the mind is telling me what an idiot I am, that I've never had a day of clarity in my life, that I'm making up all of this spiritual stuff. You know, I'm just making it up as I go. And, you know, it's telling me what an idiot I am, right? Here's what helpful self-talk is not. Let me give you the wrong example first. Helpful self-talk is not the positive information of I am clarity. I do have wisdom. Right? That's not helpful self-talk. That's positive affirmations. And that is putting whipped cream on top of the crap that I've just found in my mind. It's not healing anything. It's just covering it up again. That's a doing. When I practice these positive affirmations, if the mind's telling me I'm ugly, I say I'm beautiful. If the mind tells me I'm weak, I say I'm strong. I'm still doing. Helpful self-talk, here's what it is. Helpful self-talk is coaching me in the non-doing. Helpful self-talk, resting the mind, is coaching me in the non-doing. So helpful self-talk might look something like this. Breathe. Just take a deep breath. Relax and breathe. Relax and breathe. This too shall pass. Just rest. Just relax. Just trust. This will pass. Everything's okay. Breathe. You see how that's coaching me to do nothing? Because what I don't know how to do at the beginner phase, when the skill is not strong, what I don't know how to do is nothing. I've been addicted to the doing. So the helpful self-talk is coaching me to non-do. And when you use this helpful self-talk, if you're focused on words like breathe, rest, trust, accept, it's okay, this too shall pass. But when you're focused on that, you're not focused on, you're such an idiot, how could you be so stupid, right? You can't be in both places at once. So you are resting your mind from the chitter chatter, judge, 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 by using the helpful self-talk. Yeah, let go. Exhale, breathe. Phil's typing in some helpful self-talk. So you see how it's different than the affirmations, right? You are literally coaching yourself in the non-doing. Now, accept. Accept means accept how you feel now. So maybe it's deep unworthiness. Maybe it's guilt, maybe it's fear, maybe it's something else that you've uncovered, right? But what the human mind wants to do is get out of this as soon as possible. And that's just going to lead to repression. Remember what the Tao Te Ching says. If you want to get rid of something, which admit it, you do, first you have to allow it to flourish. Let it get as big as it wants. Let it last as long as it wants. And in order to do that, you need to accept how you feel. I don't care how guilty the guilt feels. I don't care how unworthy the unworthiness feels. I don't care how fearful the fear is. Accept it. Let it be exactly what it is. If you can accept it and let it be exactly as it is, you will allow it to flourish. And this is how you heal. This is the non-doing. Just accept it. And if you pay attention, you will notice these things don't actually hurt you. You can be shaking with fear. You can be in the fetal position in your bed, and you're fine. You're actually fine. Look, notice, you're still breathing. You know, your heart's still beating. Right? You're fine. It's okay. It's okay for fear to be running through your body, or for guilt. Just this guilt is such a horrible feeling when you really feel the depth of it. Take it from someone who knows. But you can feel like the guiltiest, so guilty. I mean, there's not even a word for how guilty you'll feel. Shame doesn't even capture it. Just this guiltiest, most shameful creature. You can feel that and you're fine. It's just a feeling. It's just an energy. You're okay. You're okay. So notice that. Notice that you are okay. Notice you can sit here and let this feeling be. It actually isn't hurting you. You know, your temperature is still, what's our temperature? Is it 96 or 98 point something? Your temperature is still whatever it's supposed to be. There's still saliva forming in your mouth. Your eyes are still blinking. You're okay, right? You're okay, so let it be 98.6. There we go. Your temperature is still 98.6. Yeah, let it be. It's okay. So accept how you feel. Accept it deeply. No matter how terrifying or how awful it is. And then the trust. Trust that that's all you are to do. This is how you heal. There's nothing else to do. Remember, it's the doing that we're not doing. You rest the mind. You accept how you feel. That non-doing is the doing. And trust that. Because the mind is still, there's got to be something I can do. There's got to be something I can do to fix this. No. Again, you've always been the problem. Those of you guys who are in 12 steps, you know that, right? You're the problem. We want to take you out of this, you know, the fixer, the controller, the manipulator. We want to take you out of this. Just be and let it take care of itself. You could say your own pain knows how to heal itself if you get out of the way. Your fear knows how to flourish and die. Your guilt knows how to get so incredibly big and then just melt away. Your unworthiness knows how to holler, 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 and then fade into a whisper. Your job is to get out of the way. So again, we're on step four right now. Step four is, I wrote it down as letting go and relaxing. And sometimes people want to know what that letting go is. How do you let go? By doing nothing. Because if you do nothing, it will go. It will go on its own. Like I said, your fear actually knows how to heal itself. Your guilt, your unworthiness, your shame, your expectations, whatever else is there, your judging. It knows how to go. And you know why it knows how to go? Is because it's the unreal, right? It's the unreal, and everything unreal comes and goes. It's never permanent. Going is a part of its nature. The only way it doesn't go is because you cling to it. So letting go, again, it's not a doing. It's not how do I do that. It's the stopping doing. It's the rest, accept, and trust. If you need a formula, it's the rest, accept, and trust. By doing nothing, the letting go will happen. If you do anything, you are actually going to grab a hold of it, and it's not going to be able to go because you're the one holding on to it. So do nothing. Let it go. Let it pass. It will move on its own. That's what temporary things do. They come and they go. One thing I want to say about letting go, relaxing, this is based on my experience. Your experience could be different. But my experience is that the big three, the big three, which are guilt, unworthiness, and fear, that's how I experience them. The big three do get much, much bigger before they disappear. And that is because we've spent our life trying not to feel those things, trying to repress them, trying to avoid them. And so they do get much, much bigger. I felt fear like I never felt before, guilt like I never felt before, and unworthiness like I never felt before when those things were healing. But because I allowed them to flourish, they also died. So don't be afraid to feel guilty, unworthy, or fearful, or whatever flavors of that you have to feel. Remember, getting big is healing. Getting really, really big is really, really healing. Just stay out of the way and let it be. So let me see if there's any questions at this point about step four, letting go and relaxing. I will tell you, if you get really, really good at this, you're going to heal really, really well. And the reason most people don't heal is because they don't get good at this. They don't get good at letting it be, resting the mind and accepting the feeling and trusting that's all they are to do. They don't get good at that. They continue listening to the mind's chitter, chatter, judge, judge, judge. And they continue trying to get out of this feeling as soon as possible. Those are human reactions, human habits, habit energies, how it's saying. And staying stuck in those habits is what prevents healing. So be willing to be uncomfortable. And be willing to not trust your mind, not believe your mind. You know, when your mind tells you what a loser you are, how stupid you are, how you can never do this, you're the worst spiritual student in the world, and you're the ugliest person and the weakest person and the biggest liar and whatever else. You know, don't trust the mind. I mean, why would you believe all that stuff anyway? Don't trust the mind. And also when it starts telling you all the things you need to do to prevent all the things that you fear, don't trust it there either. If you can learn not to trust the mind, you will heal much, much faster. I'm going to see if I can find a song. It's going to be a little bit hard because I can't fully remember the name. Let go. Yeah, I found it. Woohoo! Okay, so this is a song by Karen Drucker. It's kind of a fun song, but it's all about this step we just talked about. This song is called Relax, Let Go. So here we go. I relax, let go, release and surrender. I relax, let go, release and surrender. I relax, let go, release and surrender. All is well, all is well. I relax, let go, release and surrender. I relax, let go, release and surrender. I relax, let go, release and surrender. All is well,
all is well,
all is well. And every day I affirm and pray that I'm blessed with everything I have. I release my fear, 'cause it's all so clear. I am held,
I am held,
I am loved,
I am loved,
I am safe.
I am safe.
I relax, let go, release and surrender. I relax, let go, release and surrender. I relax, let go, release and surrender. I am well,
I am well,
I am well.
Ooh.
And now I see,
sure thing,
what
Phil,
my life can be when I trust in the process and have faith.
So that's the step, right? That's the step. Once you are looking at those false beliefs, once you are feeling those false beliefs, you just let it be. It knows how to heal itself, right? You just get out of the way, let it be, do nothing. So next week we will go into step 5, which is meditation and self-inquiry. Now again, that may just be a recording, and the reason for that is I'm here at 7 o'clock next Sunday night for the 7 steps. I'm here at 8 o'clock next Sunday night for the quarterly member meeting. By 9 o'clock, I might be ready for a break. So what I think I might do is record the mini-series and let that play for y'all next week instead of me talking for three full hours on 3 different topics, being gentle with myself. All right, I'm releasing the mic.